Hello, I'm John Alsop and welcome to the Internet Marketing 5 a Day. First thing is, you know about Twitter lists, right? So if you use Twitter, when you follow someone, you can add them to a list. So, and that list can be a private list or it can be public. So you can create, for instance, local people, people with regard to your hobby, people with regard to your musical tastes, and people with regard to your work, for instance. So you can have a list for all of those things. And if that list is public, that means other people can see your list, which is kind of curious. So actually, if you're looking to follow people who are to do with something, which I guess you would, then you can search lists and you can find, for instance, anyway, you can look at anyone and see which lists they are a member of. So if you've decided to follow someone, perhaps because they're a drummer, or perhaps because they're in Scarborough, or perhaps because they're a member of a political party, then they're likely to be in a list of like-minded people, so you can find other people like them to follow. And equally, you can look at your account and see which lists people have added you to. And of course, they name... let's see if we can do that for me, if you bear with me. It's always good to do screen clicking on the radio. But so if you look at your profile page, which you do by when you go to Twitter initially, you see your timeline and so on. And you have to click on your own name to get through to your profile page. And then if you click on lists, then it shows lists. Initially, it shows lists that you are subscribed to, which I guess means in this case, well, I mean, you can subscribe to lists, but it means lists that I've created in this case. But then there's a link for member of. And so people have added me to marketing tweeters, for instance, to Scarborough Marketing, PR, SEO, SM Tips. I don't think that's S&M Tips. I think that's Social Media Tips, honest. Yorkshire, online marketing, those kinds of things. So it tells you, actually, a little bit what people think you're doing, which is kind of interesting. It might even be good, a good source of keywords. So if this is what people think I do, then perhaps when other people want what I do, perhaps they'll search for this kind of phrase. So there's enterprise, there's tweeters, web marketing, all kinds of things, creatives. So there's a good few key phrases in there. But anyway, that's kind of all that is. But you can then look in any of those lists. So there's a list here for Scarborough, so I can click that, and then, okay, so this person has added 100 people to his list of Scarborough people, so I can find other Scarborough people in this list and see if I want to follow them. So lists is actually very powerful. I don't use it as much as I should, but there you go. Now there's a new, I don't know if you've kind of cottoned on to the strategy here, but I get inspiration for stuff from the actions that I take and the results that I see personally, and really from my environment, including from books that I'm reading. I'm quite big on books, so actually the process that I'm going through is that I'll buy a book, I'll read it, and highlight the kind of bits that I think are key, and then I'll bring it into this process. It'll come out on the Twitter feed, and then if it's a weekday, what's on the Twitter feed ends up in this internet marketing five a day podcast. So what you're really getting here is kind of the best of, but also I'm expanding on some of the things that I, obviously there's only 140 characters in a tweet, but here I can bang on about other and kind of wider aspects and try and bring a few things together. So there's a new book, which is a copywriting book called, I can reach over and tell you, Kick-Ass Copywriting in 10 Easy Steps. So we'll be getting copywriting tips from that book here, and maybe testing them out, and also trying to implement them in the tweets that I'm writing. So hopefully we'll see some kind of improvement in the click-throughs and the engagement on the Twitter feed. So that will be kind of proof of the pudding. So we'll try that. So, but one of the things from the book is the slap test, which is after your readers see your copy, that's the writing, the text on your website, do your readers stop, look, act, and purchase? That's her slap test. And we'll see how that pans out in due course. Next up is, so we have this government design principles thing, and it's specific to government, but it you know, we can choose to take on board whatever we fancy out of it. But because it's government, they have this point 10, which is make things open, it makes things better. Now, I'm from the kind of open source tradition, really. So within that, there is this rule that all bugs, software bugs, are trivial if enough eyeballs, enough people get to see the bug. The idea of open source is that enough people test the code, test software, run it and try it on their own computers, and have the problems that can then be fixed before the software gets out into the wider world. And that's one of the powerful things about open source, is that it's very well tested. And one of the other things is that because it's kind of driven from the bottom up, it solves the kind of problems that people have, not the problems that some sales and marketing department think that people have. So, anyway, that's kind of openness. But the government says we should share what we're doing whenever we can, with colleagues, with users, with the world. Share code, share designs, share ideas, share intentions, share failures. The more eyes there are on a service, the better it gets. Howlers get spotted, better alternatives get pointed out, the bar gets raised. Now, some of that you might kind of not be comfortable with from a business point of view, but I think secrecy is overvalued more and more, and I think that rule is actually an inspiration. So if you, for instance, as a developer for a company, go out to a developers conference and you talk about the great thing you're doing with some code, it's more likely that you will develop some respect for your company than it is that somebody will nick your code. So there are more benefits than downsides, I think, although people obviously hate to lose stuff. You know, so there's a strong motivator for people to want you not to share stuff but I think it's a very important kind of, you should share stuff as much as you can. Now, your favourite from yesterday is this story about, again, it's Scott Stratton in Unmarketing, and he's just talking about an art gallery that had the problem of people wandering in and going, looking at the art, and the person behind the desk saying, "Can I help you?" And them saying, "No, I'm just looking," and then they wander out and nothing else happens. And in essence, and from memory, what he got them to do instead was to say, because this art gallery had some exclusive artists that were very good, incidentally, in his judgment, they were exclusive artists, and so they were able to say to the people who were looking at a piece of art, "By the way, we are the exclusive gallery for this artist, and we have a VIP list. And so we can, if you want to sign up for it, then we can let you know what's happening. And we sometimes have kind of unveilings and previews and that kind of thing. And, you know, we'll invite you along." And so people then signed up. And having done that, they then organised, so they were getting something like from nothing, so I think he said 60 or 70 people signing up to the list every week. Fantastic. So then they said, "Well, look, we're going to have a launch. We're going to have a preview. New stuff from this artist. We're going to have it in an evening. And we're only a small gallery, so only 50 people can get in. So, you know, it's free, but you have to say you're coming. You have to get a ticket." So that's scarcity motivation. And so they did that. They did a good, nice invitation letter and a follow-up phone call. And they got, obviously, their 50 people. And they sold $60,000 of sales in that one evening. So that was from scratch, from nothing. $60,000, there you go. So, I don't know, marketing works sometimes, there you go. Finally, is this idea of, and this comes from Cialdini, The Psychology of Persuasion. You know, the other day we were saying that people, there was the test that Cialdini, or the research that Cialdini refers to back up the idea that people defer to authority. And the test was that somebody phoned a ward in a hospital and asked one of the nurses there to administer what was effectively the wrong drug in a fatal dose. And all they said to the nurse was that they were a consultant. And this was obviously it was a made-up consultant, and so the nurse hadn't met that person before, but the nurses, something like 85% of them, deferred to the fact that this was a consultant and went to get the dose and was going to administer it. So this was about deferring to authority, and what I said was, this was in 1966, it turned out, that bit of research, and I kind of think that nowadays we are much less deferential towards authority, and we're much more self-reliant, if you like, and much more ready to question authority figures. But what's come up here in what was that book I just said? Cialdini again, Influence, is that we think we don't defer to authority, but we do. So nobody thinks they defer to authority, but our behaviours are that we do. I still think that as a culture, and I'm just really talking about UK culture because I don't know anything about anything else. You know, we are less deferential towards people in authority, doctors and consultants. You know, we look up our diseases on the internet and we find out ourselves. Politicians, you know, we can research ourselves, and so you know, very, we don't have to take apps as read what authority figures tell us. But still, okay, I may have that belief, but still, according to the research, I will defer to authority more than I think I do. So it's still a powerful persuader. And I also think the other thing, that perhaps we don't defer to authority so much, but one of the things that's replaced authority is celebrity. So if David Beckham does something, that is going to be a powerful sales drive. If he happens to eat your brand of mushy peas, or wear your brand of perfume, or wear one of your hats, that's going to boost your sales. And so it's not authority, but it's kind of aspirational figures, perhaps have taken over more of what authority, the position that authority used to hold, as persuaders for us. There's still probably some kind of leader follow kind of gene going on. So if we're not going to follow authority figures, then it's been displaced into celebrity perhaps. So there you are. As a marketing strategy, perhaps celebrity endorsement is a very good thing. Okay, that's it for today, and we will talk again tomorrow. Have a good whatever you're having.